Kansas City, Missouri.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, and they have a four-month course.
Four-month course to become a mechanic.
Course, yeah.
So it was special. It was specialized on B-17s or just in general?
General.
Just general.
And so I went after I'd completed that, and I had been close to B-17. I knew what they were, and that's about all.
You heard about them, huh?
And so when I came back after the course, then a notice came up on the bulletin board about they wanted somebody as a mechanic on B-17.
Yeah.
And going overseas. And I
said, so you can volunteer for it?
That's for me.
All right.
And I went, then in, that was in August the 30th, 1942, and we went over on the Queen Mary.
The Queen Mary, you and a few thousand of your favorite friends, huh?
On the Queen Mary, and there were 17,500 people on board.
17,500 people.
Well, they had 6,000 bunks. And so, and when I'm talking about bunks,
they were stacked up this way and spread
out all over.
You slept in shifts, I bet.
Yep. And so went overseas and got to Gourock, Scotland on September the 6th. And we laid overnight there. Next day we got on a train and we went to Thurlow, which was the base down in.
Yep.
Went to Thurlow. And while there, then.
You got to see your first B-17?
Yep.
Wow.
And I went over as a mechanic on the B-17.
Right.
And.
So how long were you a mechanic before you got on the plane?
I was a mechanic on the B-17, and I got to be a mechanic on the B-17 later on too. But I got to be a mechanic on the B-17 then, beginning in August. No, in September of 1942.
Mm-hmm.
And the bomb group had flown 10 missions, and they had lost 6 B-17s, or 8 B-17s rather, 8 B-17s, and they were looking for gunners and crew. They could replace the airplanes, they could replace the officer personnel, but they couldn't replace the gunners. So I held up my hand and said, I do, I want to be a gunner on the B-17.
You're a brave man. After you get there, they lost 8 of 10. And so you volunteered to be the gunner. So how'd they train to be a gunner? Stick you in there and say, start shooting?
And I went to a gunnery school in England. It lasted for 9 days. And it was mainly aircraft identification, you know, because it was important for
to know which one you're shooting at.
Good idea.
And
shooting right blanks.
And I was a
sweet tea.
Went to that school for 9 days. I've never fired a shot in the air or anything like that. Thank you.
I'll be back with some more straws. I only have two right now.
I don't want a straw anyway.
You don't want one? All right.
So you hadn't shot anything at that point?
No.
And they put you on the plane?
And I got on the plane. And well, I fired the 50 caliber.
Oh, well, it's up at the bar.
I want a salad, but I want to see the salad.
To start off
he's
with?
He's just going for your beer right now.
I understand, but he asked if they wanted any starters, I thought.
I was just going to see if y'all have any appetizers right now, but.
No, okay.
No appetizers. I don't need
it. Yeah.
Are y'all still looking over the menu right now?
I think we got it.
We're good to go.
I think we're ready.
Remember to order.
Take your order, and I'll run and get your drink.
All right.
For y'all.
It's all in one for me.
Just a Caesar salad?
No, ticket comes to me.
Oh, okay. Got to go.
You don't have to split it up. It's all in one.
All right.
Yeah, I want a Caesar salad.
All right, do you want a. Like side Caesar salad?
Side Caesar salad.
All right.
and the Canadian meatballs.
All right.
Haven't had that in a long time.
Going old fashioned.
Yeah.
Who's that?
Albert, tell him what you want.
He'd like the eggplant,
eggplant
parmesan.
All right.
With fresh greens.
All right.
And what type of salad dressing do you have?
We have Mediterranean vinaigrette.
You can speak up to him, please.
Mediterranean vinaigrette, balsamic vinaigrette, ranch, and...
I think I'll have Mediterranean.
Mediterranean? All right, that's what it comes with.
I'm going to have the eggplant parmesan and the Caesar salad.
All right.
And is there any way you can turn down the music back here?
Turn down the music? Yeah. Okay.
I'm going to duplicate what she's having.
All right. For you, sir?
I want one with fettuccine alfredo with the shrimp.
All right.
And just a fresh green salad, side salad, I guess, with ranch.
All right. I'll get all that rang in, and I'll bring your beer, sir.
Perfect. So they give you 9 days to learn how to figure out what you're shooting at.
That's right.
And then they put you in the plane.
And the theory of aerial gunnery, because it's a very specific way of aircraft identification.
Okay.
And I got to shoot a 50 caliber machine gun on the ground.
Oh, on the ground, all right.
On the ground. And then on my first mission, which was only 20th day of December 1942.
Remember what crew you were on?
Oh yeah. I was on Rip Riordan's crew, who was a very famous pilot.
Thank you. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And I was his third tail gunner. Two previous ones had been shot and wounded, never flew again. And later on, I met both of them and became good friends with them.
That's great.
And then, wow.
And glare.
Would you want to sit here?
No.
Okay. Oh, yeah, that's shining right in your eyes, isn't it?
Here we go.
That's perfect. Solution. And on my first mission, we flew to the target, which was Romilly sur Seine. Romilly on the Seine River.
Right.
And going in, the Germans were sitting out there way up above us. And we made it to the target okay, bombed. And about 5 to 10 minutes after the target, after we bombed the target, we got hit and were severely wounded. Couple of inches out, and fortunately the rest of the group slowed up, which was contrary to regulations, slowed up, and we protected us. We got out okay with a whole lot of shooting, and then we thought we were going to have to bail out when we got back to England, but no, the plane was still flying good, and what we did was we just kept going, and we got back to the base.
Wow.
At Third Light and landed. And
nice having a good pilot, huh?
Yeah. Well, he had been shot up severely twice before.
You got like some cracked pepper in your oil?
So, did anybody get wounded? Did the crew get wounded?
On that particular mission, the pilot was slightly damaged, not badly. And he was the only one who was damaged.
I'm going to fill that one up.
That looks good.
I do.
Looks like you've done this a few times.
Just a couple.
Thanks.
Yeah, Ridden, pretty well known. So that was your first mission, huh?
That was my first mission. And
so at that point, were you still pretty happy about being a sail gunner? Or did you say, what did I do?
Yep, I did. And we were very severely damaged, but you know, we got home, and everything went good, and I was sore, though, for several days afterwards because the tail was really getting bumped up and down.
Yeah.
And it was something that...
Well, no, nobody's ever told me about that. So was that because it was always like that, or was it because the plane was
because
damaged?
Because it was damaged.
It was damaged. So you were getting a bumpy ride all the way back.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I enjoyed it.
Yeah, you might say as long as those landings equal the takeoffs, it's not too bad, huh?
Well, the nice thing about it was that I wasn't injured. I got back okay, and I was very sore because of the beating that I'd taken because the tail vibrated.
Yeah.
Good.
Is my boarding house reach here? So, did they give you a little bit of break then before you had to go on your next one?
Well, in those days, the weather was something really controlled when you flew. You had no choice.
Did you fly all of your missions with Brereton?
No. No, he had already gotten several missions in. I don't remember how many. I think it was 8 missions that he had flown. And that was my first mission, and I was sore for a number of days. I could hardly stand it. And I didn't want to have anybody do anything to me. Because, you know, if it's bouncing up and down like this.
Every bone was aching.
Do you remember how long that mission was?
Hmm?
Was that a long mission?
No.
Probably long coming home.
Well, that was real short.
Well, that was in France, so you didn't have to go as far.
Mm-hmm. Wow, you're that sore.
Sounds like you might not have made it back if you'd been bombing Germany. Did you do more missions over France?
Oh, most of my missions were over France, Belgium, Holland, Luxembourg.
I forgot to ask you, sir, would you like meat sauce or regular sauce on your spaghetti and meatballs?
Meat sauce or regular sauce, what's the difference?
One has meat in it and the other.
I want meat.
I want more meat in it.
In addition to the meatballs.
Right.
Did your crew pretty much stay the same people? Did your crew pretty much stay made up of the same people?
Oh, yeah.
So then.
Quite a number of missions, we got shot up a number of times, but not badly. You know, you could keep going.
Yeah.
And then on the, can't remember what day it was now. We went to Germany. I was on the first raid to Germany.
You were on the first raid to Germany?
Yep.
So you were one of those first over Germany people.
Yep.
All right. I bet that was exciting. Did Germans have a welcoming committee for you?
Yes, but not very many because it was a surprise to the Germans.
Good.
They didn't expect us to be bombing Germany at that time.
I had heard that. But now I get to hear from somebody who was there. What was your target that day, remember?
Wilhelmshaven.
Let me know.
Wilhelmshaven, yeah.
Albert likes it a lot.
Thank you.
Yep.
I gotcha.
Were you in the lead plane?
No. I don't recall what position we were in. But we were not in the lead plane.
So then after that, were most of your missions in Germany?
I can't, at this point in time, I really can't recall how many missions we made to Germany.
That's the part I don't like.
So what was your most memorable?
All of them.
All of them.
Now, you always said the first one and the last one were the most memorable.
Yep.
Did you tell them about the last one yet?
Not yet.
Last one,
and
I guess
we bombed.
Flying with him.
And not very deep into Germany either, because at that particular time there was absolutely no escort or anything like that. There weren't that many bombers in the air at that time.
So, but, go ahead.
We didn't get shot up badly, anything like that, you know, just get a few hits every now and then. But I went on to my last mission, and on my last mission, we were to bomb, can't even recall, but in Germany. And before we got to the target, we incidentally did back up. And I was, of course, then on my 19th mission, my regular crew had finished. And subsequently, then you flew on a crew, most of whom.
Caesar.
What did I get?
Most of whom?
We got the addition of beside
our meal.
You got a full seat.
I have a side green salad.
I got one.
You got the other green salad?
No, mine's a ranch, actually. Yeah, that was ours.
Yep.
There we go. Yep.
And I guess that means I'm here.
There you go.
All right.
Once your whole crew had finished.
Take part.
Once your whole crew had finished, who did you fly with then?
Well, see, during the course of all the missions, some people quit. They couldn't take it anymore, that kind of thing. But fortunately, the crew I was on, no one else had gotten wounded seriously or anything like that. You know, just very minor. On our last mission, I was flying with a pilot who had a limited number of missions.
Was that John Hickey, or am I remembering wrong?
Big part.
Was that John Hickey?
Oh no, John Hickey was a different crew.
So you got shifted to a plane with a pilot who hadn't had a lot of experience?
Didn't have a lot of experience, and we hadn't even gotten to the target, and we got hit by 20 millimeters. And the pilot said, prepare to bail. And I refused. I said, no way. And when I refused, another guy said, I agree. So two of us said, we don't want to bail out, let's try to go home. And with that, several other members of the crew agreed that that's what we should do. pilot says you asked for it. When we were at 18,000 feet, I think it was, he pointed the nose down, and I was told we came down at 300 miles an hour. I don't know for sure that's there because I was in the tail and couldn't tell a thing about what was happening.
Now you can kind of only see where you've been, not where you're going.
Yep. Well, when you're up at high altitude, you can always look around. And look.
Yeah.
You couldn't see what's up in front of you.
Well, if he did a big dive, why did he do the big dive?
Hey, pardon?
Why did he go down?
Were you coming back through the islands?
The reason that he was diving that way was to get down to a lower altitude. Because we had two engines out.
Oh, wow.
On one side, which made it really rough. We came down between the islands of Lili and Terschelling and leveled off, and we were making about 120 miles an hour, which is sort of slow.
Yeah.
And we were at about 100 feet altitude. We came out between the islands of Lili and Terschelling, and the anti-aircraft guns that were there were shooting at us like this. And they blew out a life raft, an explosion of one shell, blew out a life raft, and it draped over the horizontal stabilizer.
Oh, man.
Which was, made things even rougher. And we thought we were going to have to ditch. But fortunately, the pilot was able to shake the airplane around, and the life raft that came down and hit the horizontal stabilizer slipped off, which helped the wind.
Well, you said when he told y'all to bail out, y'all refused.
Were
you over enemy territory at the time you made that decision? Okay, so that's why you didn't want to bail out.
We were in Germany.
Okay. Well, you said you hadn't gotten to the target. I didn't know if you'd made it into hostile territory or not.
And, when the guns are shooting at you like this, so it gets real interesting. Not a damn thing you can do about it.
Right.
Well, you can shoot back, I guess.
But we were about 100 feet off the water.
Wow.
And as we were coming out, we shot up boats, black boats, and what was in position we could get to them.
So that was that your last mission or before the last mission?
Beg your pardon?
Was that before the last mission?
Oh, this was our last one.
That was your last one? Mm-hmm. Oh man, you barely made it back from your last one, huh?
The first one and the last one, they got
so
the
shot. So I didn't
folks. Do y'all need some more bread maybe?
Yeah, probably
so. Use a little bit more, yeah.
All right.
That's what I told the pilot when he said prepare to bail.
This is my last mission. I don't want to bail.
I said, no way. I don't want to spend the rest of the war eating sauerkraut and wieners. It wouldn't have been that good.
And you'd have been lucky if you'd gotten that.
Oh, yeah.
Don't blame you a bit.
We wouldn't have gotten it that good.
And, so who was the pilot on the last one?
Robert. The last one?
Mm-hmm.
Eugene Haynes.
Haynes, okay.
Who was it? From Birmingham, Alabama, I think.
Okay. My hometown.
So did he thank you guys when he landed?
Nope.
He probably had a lot more to do of his mission.
And as we were flying back to England, our altitude improved a little bit because we were using gasoline and it reduced our weight. And We were lucky we got back.
Yep.
Yeah. And we'd already been reported as lost.
Oh, is that right?
Wow.
And I got treated to the treatment that happens to all those people who complete their missions. Got stripped down to my shorts and a big 369 painted over my rear and 25 mission.
All right.
With house paint.
With house paint?
We actually have a picture of him.
Yes.
In his undies with a big 25 painted on his back, and he's turned around looking over his shoulder going, yeah.
Never thought I was going to make that mission.
I'm glad you did.
Well, if I recall, there was some time where you told me some higher ranking guy called you Red, and got, afterwards you were, refresh my memory on what that story was. You were doing something of a lower nature and some higher ranking person helped you out.
Well, when I came back, I was then assigned to as a mechanic again. And one day, shortly after I got assigned as a mechanic, I'm out washing the tail of a B-17.
Washing it?
And I heard someone say, Red, what in the gee hell are you doing washing the tail of a B-17?
Get some of these dishes out of the way.
I turned around.
How was everyone set?
It was General Frank Armstrong.
Frank Armstrong.
All right.
And
you told him that's what they told you to do.
And I said, ask
whoever.
They remember giving us. Story straight here.
Had you flown any missions with Armstrong? Had you flown any missions with Armstrong?
No, on my first mission, when we got back, we were so badly shot up that he was my group commander.
He was what?
My group commander.
Oh, okay.
And he came out and looked at the airplane because we weren't supposed to get back. And we did. And
so you had met him at that point then.
And that was a very lucky occurrence because Kid actually come out and looked at our airplane when we got back that day.
Mm-hmm. So he remembered you from that. He remembered you from that.
Oh, yeah. Plus, he had awarded me an air medal somewhere along the way. I can't remember when.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
You were redheaded, right? So that kind of made you stand out a little bit.
And I had hair longer than it is.
Right. Well, you got more than today than I do, so.
So he said, Red, what in the GD hell are you doing washing the tail of B-17? And I explained to him what had happened, and he said, okay, we shook hands, he was saluted, he disappeared with the base commander. And shortly afterwards, I don't know if it was that same day or the next day, I got summoned to the base commander's office, and he assigned me to a different job.
Good thinking.
I'm sure that was just coincidence.
Or not.
Well, let me back up a little bit. when I completed my tour, I got assigned, as I said, to being B-17 mechanic. And when Armstrong had seen it, you know, recognized it, then of course I got called in. And as I said, the next day and the same day, I got assigned as the engineer on what was called the standardization board. That was a board that checked all of the crew instructors to make sure that they taught the same material to the same level, so that all the crew members were fully qualified for combat. And so I was, as I said, washing the tail of the B-17. He said what he said. And I explained to him that I was assigned as a mechanic. And that day or the next day, I was called into the base commander's office. He had had a complete change in attitude. And I'm sure he had gone.
Well, you talk to a general, you can have an attitude adjustment.
It was the fellow that was over him. He had disliked him and stuck him in some rinky-dink job.
But, oh, you're a friend of the general. Oh, it's a little different. I didn't understand that.
And so I got summoned to the base commander's office, and I told him a little story, and he said, "You're going to be the engineer on the standardization board." And that meant that I was going to be checking the instructors. I wasn't checking crews, I was checking instructors.
Yeah.
And I said to the colonel, I said, "No, I said, I was an engineer, I was a tail gunner, the ball trade gunner." And he said, "Did you understand what I said?" And dismissed me.
Okay, yes sir.
So I wound up as being the engineer on the stand board. And I went to see the captain who was in charge of the stand board and told him my story, being totally honest. I said, "I never flew as an engineer. I flew as a tail gunner of all trade gunner." And I'm sure he had undergone some instructions. And so I was trained a little bit in what I should do. By the captain in charge of stand board, I'm sure he had been told I was to be.
Right. That's what he was going to do? Okay.
And
so what rank were you at that point?
I was tech sergeant.
Okay.
And so I wound up this on the stand board in charge of it, of the airmen, and I underwent several days of instruction by the captain in charge of stand board, and he pronounced me qualified, which he should. Then I spent the rest of my time in the Air Force until discharge as engineer in charge of people in stand board.
Sounds to me like you could do a whole lot worse than that.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
So was all of that at Third Line? All right. So you didn't have to go to any of those reorganization. You didn't have to go to any of that reorganization location stuff.
No, no, no. Well, no one did at that time because they weren't trained, equipped, and indoctrinated what to do.
Yep.
And when in my case, when people came back to complete their missions, I had arranged that all the combat attorneys would come and be interviewed by me or some other member of my group. And we were interviewed and decided where people should be. Because most of the gunners that were in the, had completed the tour at that time, only thing they had done is they came in the service.
Just playing on water.
There were 30 days or so of training and indoctrination. They came overseas, flew, and then came back. And they were qualified for anything like that. A few of them were. And I was very, I have to say this, capably got rid of all of the instructors that he had, because they had not been in combat. They had not been in combat.
Mm-hmm.
And so one by one, every time a combat returnee came back and needed a replacement, or some of the crews being trained needed a replacement, or something like that, I said, "You're going overseas."
Uh-huh.
I was the most unpopular guy on the base. Well, I got rid of all, it was about 150 guys that I got rid of.
But you probably saved some lives.
Exactly.
Oh, I'm sure.
Exactly.
I'm sure.
That's the most important thing.
That's great.
And so for the rest of the war, I was on the stand board. And everything went great. No problems or anything like that.
You guys like some more cracked pepper in here?
Sure.
All right, let me go get that.
Well, it's still that way. It's kind of who you know.
So, and I came back from overseas and was discharged shortly after D-Day.
Shortly after D-Day?
After VE Day.
Oh, VE Day.
Tell us about that trip you took where I see the whole crew sitting out on the grass or on the sand sunbathing.
Oh, in April of 1943, the order came down to headquarters that somebody had to go to Africa, to Algiers, North Africa, to deliver a whole lot of bags of paper.
Did you know what they were?
No idea.
Okay.
And my crew, because the pilot of my crew was Rip Riordan, and he had good reputation and had had a whole lot of hard luck, and of course we then got pointed out and said, "You go to North Africa." And I was a tail gunner on the crew, and I went down there, and of course even going down to North Africa was wrought with some damage, some dangers.
Right.
Because the Germans flew patrols out over the ocean there. And we had flown over some period of time, and we saw lights ahead. And we were flying into the harbor of Brest, France. And of course it was, by that time, it was still dark, but by that time we recognized it, got the heck out, did a 180, came back out and turned, and then went down along the coast of Spain, and we turned left, and after we got down past the coast of Spain, we made a left turn and went in and flew next to the coast of
Portugal.
We got to.
Yeah. So you got down there with no damage?
Not a bit.
So then you got to have a little R&R there?
We did.
You get a little rest and recreation there?
Oh, yeah. To be more specific, it was good. The weather was bad at our destination, and we couldn't take off, so what did we do? We just had fun.
Toughen it out.
So were any girls down there?
It had fun, and our fun, among other things, was I was issued a Tommy gun when we went down to North Africa. And so we took this out, and also pistols and whatnot. And we shot them down over the water there in Gibraltar. Then finally, when the weather was good, we took off and we flew down to over the Mediterranean.
Yeah.
To Algiers.
Algiers. Had you already done your 25 missions at that point? Was that part of a mission?
Mm-hmm. No, that wasn't missions.
That was just extra.
Didn't get any credit.
I didn't get any credit for that.
So we're in Algiers, and we laid out in the sun. We toured over the city that we could tour because Algiers was basically two sections. One of them was French, and it was very modern, had good roadways and everything like that. And the Casbah, which was primarily occupied by Arabs, and they were filthy, dirty, and not well educated, all mm-hmm. kinds of good stuff.
So were you married? When were you married?
No, I wasn't married.
Oh, so you got to play with all the local girls then when you were there.
Are you kidding? No one wants to see an American play. And then we were there in Algiers for several days. I don't know why we didn't take off immediately afterwards, but we didn't.
And you had to wait for something.
We were there several days, and then we took off, but we went to Marrakesh, way over on the east side of Africa. I have no idea why we went there, because as far as I was concerned, we had no business there. But it was nice to go there, nice to see the countryside.
Well, I'm sure you had no need to know why you were doing it. You just say aye, and away we go.
Then we took off from Marrakesh, we flew to Gibraltar. At Gibraltar, we picked up four escapees who'd been shot down over France and had escaped out of Spain down to Gibraltar. We picked up four guys.
Now, were they 306 guys or somewhere else in England?
Most of them 306.
All right.
We had picked up a pilot who had been shot down sometime early in 1943.
Oh, yeah?
I'm just going to go get my breath.
You can use this.
I'm freezing.
The AC kicking.
I must be under the vent.
This cool. The vent's over there.
It's right there.
No one there, but whatever. Yeah.
Are you cold?
I'm a little bit, now that she mentioned it, but I was just listening to them.
Yeah. So then you flew back to Thurlai?
Your meal should be out very shortly.
Okay. Thank you.
We flew back, we picked up those four escapees, flew back to Thurlai. But we didn't go directly to Thurlai. We landed in southern part of England, dropped off those four escapees and flew on wind back to.
Well, did the evadees get any kind of credit for being an evadee?
I have no idea.
You don't know? Somehow it seems to me they should. Give them at least an extra mission or so, you know. Give them credit for that.
Yeah.
Well, what happens when someone escapes? They were interrogated to find out.
Oh, yeah. Find out everything they could.
You know, everything that happened to them, you know.
Right.
And no one else got told because they didn't want it to get spread around in any way how they got out.
Right.
Because if everybody learned, then the Germans would learn.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, because the Germans knew every time we took off out of England. There was somebody who was telling them, I'm sure.
Or they'd cracked the code and were reading the teletypes and what have you.
I just know it was a very interesting time.
Yeah, so when you finished your last mission, what date was, when was it in the war? And you finished your last
22nd day of June of 1943.
1943. Wow, you were in the worst part of
the the beginning.
Yeah, when the Luftwaffe was still strong.
And before the fighter escort too.
Yeah. P-51 go.
I guess the good Lord warned you to teach a few kids in Michigan, huh?
So when did you get married?
In 1956.
Okay. And what was your wife's name?
Delphine.
Delphine?
D-E-L. I call her Del all the time.
Uh-huh.
And her father was a guy who was a Polish guy who had left Poland because he was going to be drafted into the Russian army.
Oh boy.
Well, he probably wouldn't have been here if he hadn't gotten out.
And he came back, came over to the U.S. and served in the American Expeditionary Force as a machine gunner.
All right. Good for him.
Some incredible
stuff. Where did you see Dell the first time? I'm sorry. Tell us about the first time you ever saw Dell.
Yeah, I'm sitting in the mess hall in the evening, eating the evening meal, and I saw this gal walk by on the outside, and I said, that's for me.
Just like this. Really did. It was love at first sight. It's so sweet.
So is she in the military? Or?
Oh, yeah. She was staff sergeant in the WAF.
Yeah? What was her duties?
Clerk typist.
Okay. So did you get up and run after her?
No. No. Mm-hmm. And I had a...
You have two eggplant parmas. Here. Okay.
There you go.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I'll be right back with the rest of the team.
Okay.
And we had a good friend, and I told him about her, and so he introduced us.
All right.
And we dated, and within a month we knew we were going to get married.
That's great.
So what? When was that?
56.
That was in 1956.
56.
So where were you?
Yeah, where were you then?
Pentagon?
I was working out of the Pentagon.
Yeah.
And she was too.
Yeah.
Okay.
Where was she from?
From Michigan.
Okay.
Well, that's why you ended up being back in Michigan.
Hamtramck.
What's that?
Hamtramck, Michigan. Which was, at that time, was a suburb that was largely Polish.
So did she speak Polish?
Did she?
Yeah.
Okay, I've got an eggplant parmesan.
Right here, darling.
A little. She didn't like the idea of speaking Polish.
Yeah.
My honey bunny has. Yes.
You guys want any shredded cheese?
Oh, yeah, that would be great.
Be right back.
Down.
So did she get out of the service when you did too?
No, she got out before.
Oh.
And she worked, she, we got married, and she, and I were sent to Germany. Because that's where we re-enlisted for was our assignment to Germany.
You told me to stop.
So you were in Germany a good while, you told me?
Hmm?
How long were you in Germany?
9 years, maybe. I don't remember. You just told us.
I was over there in 40 to 40. Not 42. Over there from 47 to 50.
So don't call.
I was over there more than 2 years. And I can't recall, just more than 2 years.
So how it is you adopted your son there?
Oh yeah. And so she was assigned to the Pentagon, I was assigned to the Pentagon, both of us asked for a transfer to overseas to Germany. We specifically asked for Germany. And we're lucky we got
over here.
So far so good.
All right, that's good to hear.
Because Germany was a choice assignment.
Was that because you got extra pay, or what was there? Why was that a choice assignment?
Just to
see foreign countries.
Dale's father was from Poland.
Right.
Did y'all want some Parmesan cheese?
I like a little bit.
Can you tell me when to stop?
Over there. That's very good. Thank you.
You're welcome. Would you like some?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You tell me when to stop as well.
That's it.
That's it. Okay. Good.
Yep.
Awesome.
So, thank you. So, when you were, do you have only one place you were there? They move you around.
In Germany?
Yeah.
No. We were Wiesbaden. That was Air Force.
Oh, I know. It's headquarters.
Headquarters.
Yeah. So you were Wiesbaden the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've been to Wiesbaden. It's been a month where I had a class over in Mainz, across the river.
Mm-hmm.
So we enjoyed going over to Wiesbaden. Concerts in the park, that kind of thing. It's a nice place.
I guess they chose that because it wasn't quite so bombed up as a lot of other places.
Or they'd rebuilt it better, I don't know.
Well, the people in Wiesbaden hadn't had very difficult during the war. Anyway, you know, lack of food, those kind of things, but the Germans had a big place in Frankfurt, which wasn't too far away. Hmm.
Well, how is it you end up adopting your son over there?
Well, we both went over in the Air Force.
Right.
And then when we were over there very shortly, we started, because the German people had very little at that particular time, and we started going to orphanages, German orphanages, and taking candy and cookies and those treats because
that's
they
nice.
And you know we were very popular.
I bet you were.
The scene coming was hey. But, and we see the kids and Dale and I came to the conclusion we wanted to have a child of our own. And
did that happen very much?
people adopting children?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So we said we wanted to adopt a child. And we were taken to a German orphanage. And they brought out a 3-year-old boy. And they, of course, explained to him, you know, that we were there, not necessarily for adoption or anything like that, but we were there to be nice. And we saw him, we held him, we talked to him. He didn't try to pull away or anything like that. And we said we wanted to adopt him. And they, when that happened, then when we were approved for adoption, and you had to be approved.
Right.
And we were approved for adoption. And they would then get you acquainted with some child that they thought would be a good one for you to adopt. So we saw Hugh, and we wanted to adopt him. He didn't try to pull away or anything like that. He was just curious about us.
Mm-hmm. Was his name already Hugh, or did you name him?
His name was Uwe. Wolfgang Armin Poe. Mm. And we don't know. For sure why he had all those names. We think Wolfgang was because his mother had dated a guy called Wolfgang.
Yeah.
Not sure.
So how old was Hugh when you guys got back to the States?
Three. Just,
oh, just right
about,
before
just about
you came.
3 and a half.
Okay. He pretty much grew up stateside then.
Well, as I said, he's over there right now. Mm-hmm.
Do they have records so you can know any relatives that might be there?
No. His mother turned him loose for adoption. And at that point in time, we didn't have any idea that, or he didn't have any idea that the German authorities about his family or anything like that. So we actually went to adopt him and did. And then we came back to the States, of course, and through some very fortunate circumstances, we got in contact with his uncle.
His uncle?
Yeah.
I think he was trying to find his roots. And
yeah.
So this was his mother's brother.
Get over here, folks.
We're good. Thank you.
All right.
And when we initially adopted you, he had trouble sleeping. And we were up until all hours of the night trying to get him to go to sleep. and he'd go to sleep if you held him. Well, that got to be old stuff.
Real
then,
soon.
Just through an accident, we found out that he was would go to sleep when he rode around. At that time, I owned a bug.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd go to sleep.
Okay, but would he stay asleep once the bug stopped for you guys to pick him up and put him in his bed? That was lucky.
Our younger daughter went through a spell like that. I can remember some trips staying in a different place, motel or whatever, and we'd have to go out and ride her around.
I think we did that with Brittany a couple times.
You do what you gotta do.
Not with Josh.
But when we learned that he'd sleep to go to sleep in when we're driving down the bug, we took advantage of it right away.
So when did you start going to 306 reunions?
When did he?
You.
Oh. I came back to the States and I moved in with my sister Carolyn. And when I moved in with her, I saw an item on the front page of the Atlanta Journal Constitution.
Oh yeah?
Fighting and dying at 25,000 feet. And there was a guy who was a member of that group, of the 306 bomb group. His name was in this article.
Yeah.
So I called him up and said, hey, I was in the 306, you know, what had happened to it. And he in turn introduced me to my pilot, who was in the 306.
All right.
And to Bombardier. I got acquainted with all of them.
Do you remember when that was? Do you remember when that was? About?
Boxes over here.
That was roughly
1989. Yeah, he moved in with Grandma in 1989. That's the year we were married. That's the only reason I remember. And then, right after that, probably 1991, that they started going. Because I think Grandma started, and she immediately threw herself into it.
Yeah.
You know, that's the way Grandma was.
Yep.
Well, we're latecomers.
Yep. I didn't find the 306 until 2005. A lot of reunions went by before we ever knew about it.
Better late than never.
Hey, really? Right.
And of course, it's all his fault that she's secretary and I'm president.
You know, you get blamed for a lot.
Well.
Rightfully so on this one.
Well, it worked out pretty well because I don't think it would have survived if they hadn't gotten second generation leadership going.
That's just like the Mighty Eighth in Atlanta. We just got just a little bit of resurgence and it's going off again, but it's so...
Do you like me in a box in about 3 minutes?
Yes. A little scary, do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'll when that... too.
Would you put this one
just
in first?
Just throw both these in one.
Yeah. Alright.
Okay.
Mind if I get a fork one off?
Here, what was I going to say?
This one hadn't been...
There is a... I kind of remember... I took him, there's been two things that I've taken him to that they have actually recorded. And I don't remember, one of them was at the History Museum, Atlanta History Museum.
Oh, good.
And I can get that for you, that's on the web.
That'd be nice.
And then the other one is, I don't remember what the name of it is. Remember when we went to Norcross? And it's called, not the Wounded War Warrior.
Witness to War?
That's it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
That's it. And we have actually a copy of that, which...
Oh,
yeah, I'd like to get that.
We can make a copy.
Okay. Well, we'll have to give you guys a copy of what he's been working on, his autobiography, because it has all this information and lots more.
Yeah. But, you know, I've been putting... I'm now webmaster, so, as well as being president. Now, I'll probably get rid of the president's job, but I don't know if I'll ever get rid of the webmaster job. But, so I've been putting more and more stuff up. And just in the last...
So did y'all save any room for dessert today?
Not me, I'm stuck.
Not me either. Grandpa, you want to take that home with you?
No.
Okay.
Would you like a dessert?
Yeah. Do you want any dessert or anything?
Are you finished with your plate?
I'm all finished.
Okay. Yes, please take
it. All right, y'all ready for the check?
Yeah.
Yes, please.
All right, I'll bring it out.
Yeah. So,
anyway, Charles has gotten a program that allows him to split off some snippets of oral history interviews, and he'll be posting some of those.
Well, the oral history is not what I need to really cut so much. It's the videos that I have to take snippets of because it's so big.
Well, the oral history.
Take up a lot of it.
Yeah, the oral history. We got several of those witness to war that they've done for various vets.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to get his. And then what I'm going to do is I'll take some segments out of that where they're talking about a particularly interesting aspect. And then I can post those.
Okay.
So that would be really good if I could get that.
Okay.
Actually, I will put you in touch with the guy who did the... Well, we'll give you a copy of that. But apparently, the fellow that started this whole the Witness to War in Atlanta or in Norcross...
Right.
He did it because he never got to hear his father's or grandfather's story.
Yep.
This is a real good friend of the Corleys. I mean, just everybody knows him, but he's a really, really great man. I don't know if you know him or not.
I think.
What is his name?
Right, blanking
the
out.
The one
right.
we met who came to our New Orleans reunion to do some interviews, and those are the ones we have recordings of.
Mm-hmm.
He goes by Seeb Maddard.
I don't think he's the top dog.
No,
just
he
one
isn't.
Of, right.
I'm just saying, it's the only one we know from Witness to War.
Yeah.
And I don't know if he's even with them anymore.
Right.
Yeah, well, they do this in his building.
Right.
In mm-hmm.
There you go.
But I've got to get you that name, because I bet you their library catalog and Sue Verhoff, we should definitely give them Sue Verhoff's number. From the Atlanta History Museum, because they've done a lot there.
Oh, good.
So they might have some people that you guys are not aware of, that are not plugged in.
Yeah.
Or who aren't with us anymore. Yeah. So not everybody's been lucky enough to make it to 94.
Well, I think there's only two people in the Georgia chapter.
There are 306.
That were in...
You have to look it up.
World War II.
No, I can.
Albert, did you take out your hearing aid?
Yep.
Why?
Why?
It's uncomfortable.
Okay. You're going to have to get used to wearing them again, though.
My mother had the same problem. She hated wearing her hearing aid. But I've got a guy that's in his 80s, and he's in a German class with me. And he's now been in four or five German classes with me. And he has a Hearinggerät, which is hearing aid in German.
And hope y'all enjoyed everything. Yeah. Y'all have a wonderful day.
And I have to keep reminding him before we go to wear his hearing aid, because he talks too loud when he doesn't have it. And the kids in the class, it makes them feel a little uncomfortable because he talks too loud. So
this guy yelling at us.
Yeah. And he's a funny guy and interesting, but he's a curmudgeon. But so me and my other buddy that about my age is taking a German class, so we go over and we make sure he gets his hearing aid.
Well, do I talk too loud?
No.
No, you're not talking too loud at all.
No, you're fine.
I just didn't see it in your ear.
How much longer are you in?
I don't know
Atlanta?
How much trouble you have hearing when you don't
Tuesday.
Until Tuesday.
Do you guys have plans Monday?
Some.
We're taking his sister to lunch, and we're going to my cousin's house for dinner. Those are the only plans we have.
What time Tuesday do you leave?
We leave Wednesday morning, early Wednesday.
We drive to Birmingham quite early Wednesday morning.
So you have Tuesday.
Right.
Sometime to, okay. Because this is Sue Bearhoff's card.
Oh,
now,
okay.
On the back of this card, we can actually go into the Atlanta History Center and visit there.
Oh, okay.
I would love to put you, definitely put you in touch with her.
Super.
But if you want to go there, it is fascinating.
Okay.
The place is absolutely amazing. And she absolutely loved Albert.
Well,
who doesn't?
I know.
What's
amazing.
Not to love?
But yeah, that card.
So
we kind of like him ourselves.
Yeah, but she really took.
So the Atlanta History Center is this address on West Paces Ferry?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
His grandmother used to live on West Paces Ferry.
Oh, actually, really?
Yes, your grandfather did too before he died.
Yeah.
But she was there longer. So.
And she's.
Yeah. Excellent.
Yeah, I know that one.
And I'm trying to think who. God, there's so many people. I wish you. If you ever come back to Atlanta, try to come back when you can be here the second weekend of the month, so that we can take them to our Mighty Eight brunch.
Second Saturday of every month is the
Mighty Eight
meeting.
Oh my gosh, yeah, that would be amazing for you guys.
It's over right across the street from the VA hospital in Atlanta.
The second Saturday of the month.
One down in Claremont.
Second
Saturday of the month. Now, they're not a lot of 306.
Right.
However, there's so many other different members
right.
that occasionally, I mean, they fly in from all over, or, you know, friends of friends fly
right.
in that you can, I mean, you can make connections
yeah.
everywhere.
Yeah.
And our attendance is very highly variable.
You know, oh, yeah.
Some months we have a lot, other months very few.
Yeah.
Well, we might could even get my brother Carl and his wife Caroline Poitras to come over from Birmingham for that, too.
Yeah.
Charles and I are members of the Mighty Eight, and I don't think they are, but
yeah.
we could get them over here.
Yeah, that would be fun.
Yeah. And Steve Snyder's Mighty Eight as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And where did you say the luncheon is?
It's at the Claremont.
Claremont.
Across the street from the VA.
I remembered I had a card.
Oh, you gave
I had
card
an extra card.
Okay,
I swiped
fine.
It so you wouldn't
okay,
misfile.
It's like a.
Have you guys our Facebook
it's sort
page?
Of a development. It's got apartments, condos. Just called the Claremont. It's on Claremont Road, right there. Across
I've got
hospital.
Charles Neal. Account.
Say my.
What is your email address, Lisa?
Actually, I'm going to give you his, because
okay.
I am...
Whoever answers will read.
He does.
Mr. Fade Master, M-R-F-A-D-E-R.
Okay, this is the Mighty Eight organization in Atlanta.
M-A-S-T-E-R.
That's where we meet, and then all these members.
Yeah.
And Albert is...
Is this like Atlanta chapter or something?
Yeah, that is.
Yeah.
And we post...
Yeah.
See, there's Albert Camp.
Recordings.
And that's at Richard. He got
most of my life.
Yeah.
Building recording studios and running
from the French.
Oh, yeah.
You're one of the few people that gets that.
Yeah.
Most people are like, what is
Richard.
That?
He comes Richard Sadler. He's going to
because back in the day, I was building operating recording studios before boards were automated. You actually had to move the faders.
Right.
That's a nickname I picked up. You're the fader.
Yeah, well, we got time.
Sort of stuck.
Right now, still several hundred.
I'll copy him. 306
really, and we're going, when is it, May 16th, we're going to Savannah to the
Mighty Eight Museum.
And then they're having the gala, whatever it is.
Yeah, they're having the big unveiling of the B-17 being completed.
Oh, okay.
Oh, wonderful.
Or is it the annual?
Vivian, what's her last name?
Or no, they already did that.
We were there for that. This is for their
recently.
Annual gala, whatever
okay,
it is.
Okay.
But Albert... was invited.
I'm one
he
big
sits
event
a general. I don't know who this guy is, but he invited Grandpa to sit at his
excellent.
Table, so we're going to be
perfect.
Yeah. Doing that. He's looking forward to doing that.
Well, I wish we could have
been
here
for
that.
You and the secretary
that.
Here together.
Good past night. And present secretary.
Past and present secretary. Yeah.
Do you want to take one of y'all?
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Okay, Daddy, you do it. You interface better with machines. Machines and I have a problem.
Just interface poorly with machines.
One of our daughters would try to keep her away from electric chairs.
Anything that takes logic.
That's her.
And Don's an artist.
Exactly. Give me art or paint or music.
We'll get the long and the short of it here, Albert.
Okay. We'll get the two of y'all first.
Yeah.
You kind of have to hold it down. It goes off when it feels like it.
Okay.
There we go.
Apparently.
Now we'll get three of
it. Yeah.
Yeah, it did.
Even do without the hat. Don't do that for many people. Thank you.
Well, you've got a very nice family.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Thank you.
Look at the handsome guy in the middle there.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I said we
affectionately refer to him as Stud sure. Muffin.
We do. Yeah.
Not. I take him to Hooters, and I swear it's not 5 minutes, and all the waitresses are hovering around.
Now, that is the truth.
I love it.
He is a chick magnet when you go out to lunch. It's amazing.
Why didn't you ask? Did you have that problem in Thurlow?
Big horn.
Did you have that problem in Thurlow?
No.
Well, I understand a lot of those Thurlow boys managed to find English girls.
Oh, yeah. Many of them.
Yeah, we had some interesting tales by the medic, who's Houlihan. Mm-hmm. Houlihan has some interesting tales about that.
Houlihan.
Yep.
At the last reunion, we had Houlihan on one of the oral history group things that we do now at each reunion, Vets Roundtable. And he was
describing
expounding
how,
on that.
The Thurlow, they had a flag for the unit that had the highest rate of syphilis. And they had that flag for a long time.
And that was something to be proud of and admiring, I imagine.
Not really. But
that was not the reason.
And he was the medic.
It was a cautionary thing.
You know what? I imagine under that amount of stress, even at that time,
you know if you're going to be alive the next day.
Exactly. And honestly, I kind of think that's kind of better than drinking or... You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, didn't you say the first cigarettes you ever smoked was that first mission you flew?
Yep.
Oh, yep. I'd forgotten that story, but I remember you mentioning that before.
And that was that the first time you drank?
No,
that was the first time you got drunk.
No, it wasn't the first time. Was it?
Yeah, that's what you always say.
I think that's what you always talk. Yeah. And then your last one was, did you tell him the story about your taxi driver?
Well, he's got lots of stories here. I mean, you didn't tell him the one where you had to fly the B-17.
Yeah.
I'll put the dollar.
Well, that wasn't a case of had to. I did that by request.
Well, because you said you could do it, and the guy called you on it. The superior officer said, okay, Smarty, come do it.
So you flew the plane?
He took it off, flew it, and landed.
All right.
With no training.
Not being a pilot, no.
They're not gonna
run. My takeoff was great. My landing was sort of hard.
Well,
he
didn't crash it, and it was okay.
He never touched the guy in charge of the standboard. Was in the right hand seat. I was sat in the pilot seat, and he never touched the thing.
That's amazing.
All right. But they didn't let you do it again, huh?
Oh, gosh.
I didn't want to do it again.
He just done it from flying in them so many times, knowing what to do, watching them, I guess.
I'm sorry.
Matthew's going in order to that.
So who drove you guys around when you would go into Bedford and that kind of thing?
Well, they had a...
I'll check on Josh.
...bus that did it.
Uh-huh.
And also there were taxi drivers.
So you go to any dances?
Big pardon?
You go to any of the dances they had? Didn't they have some dances?
I wasn't into dancing, so I didn't attend any of those. I grew up in a Baptist family.
I see.
Yeah.
If you dance,
you were going to hell
in a handbasket.
Yeah.
Well, my grandfather, on Sundays, you couldn't dance. You couldn't do hardly anything. About the only thing you could do on Sundays, besides going to church, is you could do puzzles. You know, put together puzzles.
Jigsaw
puzzles.
Well,
but the only entertainment, you couldn't play cards. Any game of chance, couldn't do that. But you could do puzzles.
Well, we could do a lot of things as long as they had nothing to do with the work. Only work we did was taking care of the animals.
Well, dancing's not work.
It depends on how good you are at it or not.
were you there when, what was his name, Maynard something or another?
Snuffy Smith?
Yes, yeah, when Snuffy Smith got his award, were you still at Thurlow?
You got the Congressional Medal of Honor.
Yes, yes.
There was a fellow that I've talked to recently who lives up in Michigan, one of the vets, and he just refound us in recent, last year, I think. And he did some driving of different people while he was at Thurlow. And one of his duties was to drive Snuffy Smith around. And we've had trouble finding much about this guy's time at Thurlow because he had flown a few missions with some other group and then he was moved to Thurlow. And he was qualified as a truck driver. And apparently, because of burst eardrums or whatever, they wouldn't let him fly anymore. So they had him driving. And I just wondered whether you might have any recollection of any of the 306 guys who did that kind of
No.
Okay.
The only ones I have any recollection of are very, very limited. Mm-hmm. Hey, that was what, 70 years ago?
Yeah.
80 years ago?
73, yeah.
I just wish you still had that time again.
Yeah, I don't remember anything 70 years ago.
Well, there's a fact that you're missing there.
Yep.
You weren't around.
That's right. Yeah. But no, I'm amazed at the memory. I mean, you even today have mentioned several specific dates. So some of those were obviously burned in your memory at the time, really important times.
Yes.
He has selective memory. There are certain things he can remember and just rattle off like that.
Yeah.
And other things.
Well, I can't remember what I had for breakfast the day before yesterday. So
I can't even remember what I had for breakfast today. No, it's true. I don't remember things that happened now as much as a long time ago.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty common.
Well, and there are a lot of more significant events in your life, too. They're really etched into your brain.
Yeah. I'm sure you'll never forget that ride in the tail coming back from that first mission.
In my last mission, I was in the tail.
Did you tell them the story about your suit when it shorted out? He's got a bunch of good ones.
What kind of suit? Your flight suit?
Electrical heated suit.
Yeah.
Flight suit.
Yeah, flight suit. You spilled some liquid on it or something?
No.
You could say.
It was electrically heated. It's like an electric blanket.
Right.
Except, you know, it was shaped the right way. And it shorted out. And when it shorted out...
It was pretty exciting.
I was on the mission and yelling, "I'm on fire, I'm on fire." And the pilot said, "Shut up and keep shooting."
Uh-oh.
Well, I think you were in the ball turret on that one, weren't you? Weren't you in the ball turret on that one? And all the shells from him shooting had basically filled up the bottom of the turret. And he couldn't move to get loose from the suit, and the electrical shorts just kind of sitting there burning him.
Yep.
Wow.
Couldn't.
Just kind of stuck in it. It's like, hey, just keep shooting. Not much else you could do at that time.
Well, did you ever hit anything?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my first one and my last one. First one, I don't know if I hit anything or not. I shot at him. But on the last one, I was sure that I really played havoc with one. But if nobody else, you know, no other crew sees it.
Doesn't count.
Doesn't count.
Well, you'd had plenty of practice by that point.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was talking to, communicating with Walt Rosette, and he said that the biggest problem he had was flak, because at that point he was flying later than you.
Oh, yeah.
And so they didn't have as many of the Luftwaffe, but they still had lots of flak.
Oh, yeah.
Yep, chunk of steel doesn't do well when it flies through the middle of an airplane, by
yeah,
the
yeah.
Yeah, one time I had a piece of flak come in on one side and go down on the other, and had I been leaning over, I would have gotten it.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah, Walt also said that when it comes to war, better lucky than good.
Yeah.
A little of both is the best.
Yeah.
Yes. Can't ever complain.
Sometimes.
I'm sure mine was luck.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes you make luck, sometimes it's just luck. Like that, talking about that tail gunner, you know, that I forgot the name, which one it was, but the famous picture they have of the plane where the tail gunner, plane was all shot up and the tail gunner was going to try to get out, but the plane wouldn't stay stable, so he had to sit there while there was nothing between him and the rest of the plane, a piece of metal. And that, but gave them the stability to be able to fly. And they made it back.
Well, they made it back to England.
Yep. Hmm.
Yes, some wonderful things happened.
I was talking.
I'd call it wonderful, I'd call it amazing.
Amazing, right. We were talking to Field McChesney. I don't know if you ever knew him, but he was on the same plane as Barbara's uncle. And I got him talking about jumping out of the plane and how they were trying to help her uncle and all that, and he says, and then they landed, and he says, those people weren't very happy about us. That was not a nice one. Local townspeople were pretty upset with us, and so we were actually kind of glad to see the police come up, because we thought those townspeople were going to kill us.
Yeah.
And the police comes up, and then they took him away.
He went down over Germany.
Yeah.
Over what's now part of the Czech Republic, but
yeah.
Then, of course, it was Germany.
Yeah. Townspeople were pretty upset. That was not a good welcoming committee. He's an interesting guy. We saw him last summer.
We'd seen you.
Yeah, after we'd seen you. And his birthday was coming up in a couple of weeks or something. And he says, oh, nobody will pay attention to it. I said, well, why is that? He says, oh, my sister just turned 100. So everybody went up to celebrate her 100th birthday. So, you know, he was only 94 or so. So
we're counting on him making it to that milestone.
Well, they're doing pretty good so far.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
I'm trying to find his witness to war, and I can't make this stinking thing.
I had mine giving me a hard time earlier today. I knew his sister's number was in it, but it kept wanting to give me somebody else.
Oh, yeah, that number's no longer. She's got our number. Oh, you mean his sister?
What are you typing in? Yeah. Witness to war?
WitnessToWar.org, Albert, and I can't make it. I was hoping to pull it up so that I could just send it to you.
The link? Yeah.
Well, George will get my email, and you can find it and send it then.
Oh, I really like if we can get back to the house. I've got some stuff.
Witness to War, Dr. Charlie Clements.
Oh, it's in the Atlanta, the Norcross one.
New City Digital.
Wow.
Did we save it? Well, I know we've got the disc at home. If we could run home and grab that, because I've got so much stuff in it, and you know, we have some doubles of those pictures. Has he given you any pictures?
I don't think so. We can also take pictures of pictures.
Well, she scanned them.
Oh, you scanned them. Oh, okay.
You can attach
I'm separating, and I am not.
Yeah, I know.
I do not integrate well with
but I'm learning, trying to learn. But because we've got a lot of his actual, the war pictures, and then we have family pictures, yeah. And then we have.
I'm gonna find the restroom here.
Pictures.
What was the last one?
War. The Mighty Eight.
Oh.
I mean, I scanned probably 700 pictures so far, and we've got.
We don't need all those.
No, probably we've got another two, but there's some certain ones that are. If I could just get you those copies of them. Mm-hmm.
Well, if you.
Excuse me.
If Charles could sit down at your computer and you know where they are on the computer, he could just.
That's what I'm thinking. If he's a computer.
Right.
Not geek, but I wouldn't say that. But he's not here, so I can say that.
No, he doesn't mind being called a computer.
He can just.
He did computer work before FBI, so he's been in computers a long time.
Yeah, he's going to McMahon.
I was in computers for a long time, but I've forgotten all of them.
Is the women's restroom in there, too?
Mm-hmm.
It is? Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm going
to be so bad. Springtime is done, and I can breathe again.
Yep. Should have had.
I'm fortunate that.
You are.
I'm not bothered with that.
It will pass.
It's a pretty day. I'll just put a mask on and go outside. So you guys are heading back on Tuesday or Wednesday?
Very early Wednesday morning. Yeah.
And you guys are living in where now?
Park City, Utah. And it's up in the mountains from Salt Lake. Okay. So when Lisa comes back, we'll go to the house.
Okay.
And you can sit at her computer and perhaps pull up.
Sure.
What she was trying to find the links for and photos. And
I get along with computers pretty well.
Yeah, that's what I told her.
Yeah. First thing you need to know about computers is they're dumb.
They're a stupid box. They only
that's
do
right.
what you tell them to
that's
do.
That's right. And not what you want them to do, what you tell them to do.
What you tell them to do. If you tell them to do the wrong thing, that's
they'll
what
do.
They're going to do.
You inadvertently tell them anything.
And of course, there's occasional spurious electrons that. Seem to just run off and do what they want.
Yeah, every now and then they just seem to kind of have a mind of their own.
Well, we'll let, I guess she's going to go to the restroom. I think we're ready.
All righty.
So you've
been, thank you so much for lunch.
Oh, you're more than welcome.
Yes, thank you.
Yes.
Next time I think we need to treat.
Well, we'll see. We've been visiting him now in Atlanta every year we get over here. I've got a lot of relatives here. I've got four or five cousins and two sisters, and niece, nephew, all that. So I used to come like three or four times a year because I was power attorney for my mom, but after she died, I don't have to come quite as often. It is a long way.
It is quite a way.
Yeah. That's a good little drive. What is that, about 1,600 miles?
I kind of fortunately don't remember.
So you guys drive down here?
No.
I was gonna
last
say
year we drove, but this year we flew into Birmingham where Barbara has a lot of relatives.
Okay.
And then we rented that car and we drove from there up to Tennessee and visited some friends up there, and then drove to North Carolina, visit one cousin, drove further North Carolina, visit another cousin.
He must like driving.
He likes visiting people.
I like visiting people.
Okay.
All right. Not really. I used to really like to drive, but now, you know, I don't mind, but I don't really like driving at night so much.
Now you're on helicopter?
That's right.
Now, and the 306, it's in September?
Yep, 17th.
The 17th. I'm trying to think. Josh goes back to school. He would be in school.